Hello, everyone, and welcome to Module 6 of Advanced Aromatherapy, Therapeutic Application of Essential Oils for Clarity, Health, and Happiness with David Crow, titled Essential Oils and the Digestive System, Part 1. This is your host, Colleen at the Shift Network. Just a couple reminders, if at any time you have a technical issue or question, and you're on Maestro, please press 5 on your telephone keypad and I will come along and assist. If you are on the webcast, please type directly into the box and please remember to include your email address so that I may reply by email. That covers it for today, so let's bring on David. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Colleen, and welcome back to everybody all over the world. Let's go ahead and get started. So we have a few things to conclude from the respiratory system, quite a few things actually, a lot of information on the respiratory system because essential oils and aromatherapy, as you have learned, are primary treatments. So if you would, please go to the course page and move your cursor to the link at Module 4. And please open up the file titled Monographs for Modules 4 and 5. We are going to be referring to this because we still have several essential oils that we have not really studied as individual oils. So please open Monographs for Modules 4 and 5. Monographs for Modules 4 and 5. And then you can also go back to last week's class. Click on the link for Module 5, and you will see the wonderful class we had last week. Calling in from New York City, Antimicrobial Powers of Essential Oils, which I hope that everybody has read and you have gained some further insights into why essential oils and aromatherapy are extremely important. Essential oil research, that's just a lot of scientific studies. We're not really going to be spending much time delving into that, but it is something that those of you who are scientifically inclined may want to spend some further time with. And we have the webcast questions from session 4 and so forth. Mostly what we want to do for today is open up Module 6. So there's actually not anything in Module 5 that we need to open or be concerned about. We do need to open Module 6, and here, a new set of monographs, please open that, and then the webcast questions that have come in. And that's where we will start with the webcast questions. You will see that there are far less files in this particular class, and that doesn't mean you're not going to get them. It just means that they're going to be emailed separately. Because of our travel schedule, I have fallen behind in getting files over to the Shift Network. But we also have a two-week break. So 1 week from today, there is no class. But by the time 1 week rolls around, you will have received all of the files that are going to be covering the material that I will be talking about on this particular class. Okay, so I wanted to start with some information from the webcast. So the questions that came in from the webcast are posted, and you can open that file in the current class, Module 6, and you can just follow along with me because there are some really good questions here. And I'll go ahead and take a little bit of time to address a couple, and I will also invite everybody who is listening. I know we have a slightly smaller group this time, but anybody who would like to raise their hand and call in, anybody who would like to send in more webcast questions, I feel free to do that. And while we are waiting, everybody now has their files open, and if anybody would like to present a question or a comment or even a wonderful testimonial, we'll get to you in just a moment. But if you look at the file from session 5, the webcast questions that came in last week, I just wanted to touch on a few that are related to our transition into the topic of essential oils aromatherapy for the digestive system. And so Again, we are having questions about taking essential oils internally, and I imagine that we will probably have this discussion for some time because everybody is really trying to figure out ways to do it, how to get through the loopholes in the safe use. And so one of the questions is there a safe protocol for using oregano oil capsules internally? Now, this is actually related to the use of essential oils for digestive problems, even though they are oregano oil capsules are also prescribed for respiratory things and for immune system. Well, they're prescribed for a lot of things. And you can see my answer here. If the essential oil is diluted in olive oil, it's safer that way than if it's not diluted. That seems to be the primary difference in products. And often, you know, no matter what form it comes in, there's still going to be some individual sensitivity and some degree of risk from taking too many, too long, and too often. So here's a little suggestion about just one capsule per day, maximum. Stop immediately if you feel onset of heartburn, which is one of the typical symptoms of taking oregano oil capsules internally. I'm mentioning this because a lot of people do take it. A lot of people do find that there is benefit. A lot of people also get heartburn, okay? And what's really a little complicated about this is that many times by the time the heartburn shows up, you've already been taking the oregano oil for too long. So where would you want to use oregano oil internally? Well, let's put that question off. That's an excellent question. Okay. Let's delve into this a little bit more in the digestive module today and the next module, because this is something that is directly related to our topic. Okay. And here we have another question here. Somebody's added a single drop of frankincense to honey. And again, people seem to be really interested in taking essential oils internally. So I'm always going to qualify this. And as you know by now, the main issue with frankincense for internal consumption or for any kind of consumption is that it is one of those oils that's very adulterated on the market. And so I suggest that if you feel you really need to take essential oils internally, you're going to have to know your source. And obviously, I can stand by the quality of what we are importing ourselves from our distiller in Ethiopia. But if you're getting it from somewhere else, I can't say that. I can't say that it's okay. But there is a nice little addition to this, and that is that you don't have to use the essential oil. You can use the tear of the frankincense resin. And this will be one of the remedies that I will mention when we come to the digestive system shortly, and that's because part of the digestive system, we will be talking about gingivitis and dental health and so on, and chewing frankincense resin is how people traditionally used it internally. And I can tell you some stories about the benefits of using frankincense resin as a gum. It releases a small amount of essential oil in a biocompatible level, and it has a lot of therapeutic benefits, and you don't have to worry about whether the oil is full of some type of toxic chemical. Okay, so you can scroll down here, and a very important piece of information comes a little further. Applied undiluted oregano oil directly to the skin of a child. I guess the child applied it to himself is what this question sounds like. So three things to say here. Number one, keep essential oils away from children. That's always common sense rule here because children get into things and they can burn themselves, obviously poison themselves. And there have been a few poisoning cases with essential oils from kids drinking them because they weren't safely kept away. But then what are you going to do if you do have a burn on the skin? This is the second point. You can wash it with milk, and that will basically get the oil off because oil is not water soluble. A small amount is okay to wash, but it's best to just rinse it off with milk. And then you can put a little coconut oil over it to dilute it further and to protect the skin. Same basic protocol if essential oils get in the eyes. And so this is point number three, and that is rinse with milk. If you don't have that easily available, wash the eyes for an extended period of time with water. So those are the two standard responses that are given to those conditions. Keep the oils away from kids. Wash the skin with milk. Apply coconut oil. Wash the eyes with milk or extended flushing with water. And if the oils are taken internally and there is a potential poisoning case or actual poisoning case, the recommendation is to drink milk, do not drink water, because it can make it worse. Okay, so many good questions, and thank you very much. Good questions and good comments. So you can just go ahead and read the rest of these. Many, many people have submitted many questions, and of course we could take a lot of time, but we won't. But we can take a few minutes for any live calls or anybody who is writing anything very specific about this. So let me go ahead and take a look at the webcast questions that have come in. And Colleen, if you would like to mention that people can raise their hand. Maybe there is someone who would like to call in with a wonderful testimonial.
Thank you, David. So please, for anyone that would like to raise their hand, if you're on the telephone, please press 1 on your telephone keypad. And that will raise the hand. Otherwise, would you like a new question from the webcast while we're waiting, David?
I'm looking at the webcast questions here, and it looks like some of these are actually already answered. They're going to be coming next week. I've received some of these.
Okay.
So let's see. Let me see if there's one. What can we answer here? Okay, here's a nice one. It's a very simple question. Are hydrosols good for medicinal uses? The answer is yes. They're very, very good for medicinal uses. The hydrosols, of course, are the aromatic waters that remain after the distillation process. And hydrosols have a lot of excellent uses for skin care. For example, most of the flower hydrosols, like rose water, are very pleasant to spray directly on the skin. They're good for the complexion, good for skin conditions of many types, and we will actually cover hydrosols for the skin in the skincare module. Hydrosols are much safer to consume internally. So for those of you who are really interested in the consumption of essential oils, why don't you start with hydrosols first? And that would be a really good way of experimenting to see if something is potentially irritant, because the dangers of consuming a teaspoon or a tablespoon of hydrosol, even if it's from something like oregano or cinnamon, the dangers are much, much less. So we will actually be talking about this in the modules on the digestive system, which we are moving into. We still have a bit to finish. But there was one other very important thing that I wanted to point out that came in on the webcast last week. And let me just pull this up here. And there was one question that really caught my attention that I wanted to give some additional information on. There is a good question here. Let me see. Okay, so this is on the webcast question file that is now posted. So it would be, here's the statement. It would be beneficial to have actual respiratory system recipes for each of the doshas. Okay, well, some of that has been given. There will be more coming. And let's see. Is there a maximum number of drops for high dermotoxic potential, such as cinnamon or cloves? Well, the answer to that is basically just remember the dilution ratios, okay? So the dilution should be 1% or less for something like cinnamon and clove. Now, and that's clearly stated repeatedly in the monographs, okay, and also in the safe use. But what really caught my attention here was this last sentence. Using honey for a diabetic will require cinnamon essential oil. So this is obviously a response to the discussion on the cough syrups. And yes, this is absolutely correct. This is one of the things that I did mention, is that honey is not good for diabetics, but the solution is not to take it with cinnamon essential oil. And so first of all, diabetics should not be using honey, and nobody should be consuming cinnamon oil internally, whether you are diabetic or not. So I imagine that this discussion will probably go on week by week because people are so interested in taking them. But again, my position is please don't take cinnamon oil internally, clove oil, oregano oil. Just don't do it, okay? It's just too much of a risk. However, as we're going to learn today in the digestive module and again in the next module, there are so many of these spice oils that can be used internally but not as oils. Use them as a whole plant. So here we can say the use of cinnamon in powder form is quite safe, up to doses of a half a teaspoon, and some people even take more as part of an herbal regimen for type 2 diabetes. It's not particularly beneficial for type 1 diabetes, but it is definitely getting a lot of positive reviews now and positive results for people with type 2 diabetes. So please do not take cinnamon oil internally, even if you have heard that cinnamon is good for diabetics. Okay, cinnamon being good for diabetics is correct. Cinnamon oil is not good for diabetics. It's not good for anybody. So I wanted to also mention that a student in this program submitted some very interesting notes to me. They are now posted on social media, and the notes were taken at a conference of a large multi-level marketing company, and I gave my responses to this, and I couldn't help but comment on these statements because they were just so disturbing to me. So, for example, the person who is in charge, I'm not going to name names, but supposedly the medical director of this MLM company made a very interesting statement that the reason that, and this is a justification for using essential oils internally, it is safe to use essential oils internally because the mucous membrane protects the cells. And I was just astounded because this is a medical person, not a medical doctor, a chiropractor, but here's the medical director of a large, large company who is telling people this program of how to consume essential oils on a daily basis, large amounts of essential oils on a daily basis, up to 18, 20 drops for adults, taken internally every single day. And the justification is that the mucous membrane will protect the cells from the essential oil. But for those of you who may not understand the significance of that, the mucous membrane is cells, and the essential oils will damage those cells. So to say that the mucous membrane will protect the cells from the essential oils, it reveals an incredible degree of ignorance about basic anatomy and physiology. And then furthermore, if the therapeutic benefits of the essential oils are actually coming from the interaction with the cells, which of course is where herbal medicine works, they have to interact with the cells somewhere, whether it's the mucous membranes or the muscle tissue or the blood or whatever, then it doesn't make any sense to protect the cells from the essential oils. So I'm sorry, I couldn't help but add a little commentary to that because it's just very profoundly ignorant, that's all. Okay, end of political commentary. Now, let's go on and let's finish our respiratory module, okay? And what we covered last week, we had quite a lot of information that we got into, and we continued our discussion of why essential oils were so good for respiratory and infectious conditions. And I hope that now all of you have a very clear understanding of how essential oils are starting to come together in terms of their application to different body systems. And obviously, inhaling micro droplets of essential oils that have been dispersed in the air through a diffuser or in steam is a totally different way of coming in contact with the essential oils than putting a drop of the liquid in your mouth. And so we are going to make a transition today from finishing the therapeutics of the respiratory system into the therapeutics of the digestive system. And we're going to find that we're moving from one system that is highly responsive to essential oils, many, many applications and methods of using many, many oils very beneficially for treating both acute and for chronic conditions, for helping to strengthen the mucous membranes, for regulating the terrain. And what I mean by that is, if you will recall, we talked about the tridoshic nature of oils. It means that if we use them with steam, that they are helping to moisturize, and that's good for the vata conditions. And if we are using them for inflammation, that's cooling the pitta. And if we're using them for congestion, that's removing the kapha. So that's basically what is meant by regulating the terrain of the mucous membranes, is that the essential oils bring the mucous membrane terrain back into a state of balance. They kill the microbes. They do it in a biocompatible way. They don't endanger the mucous membrane of the respiratory system unless you really overdo it. And they are so beneficial for so many conditions. And what we will see when we transition to the digestive uses of essential oils is that suddenly we're extremely limited by the simple fact that the mucous membrane is composed of cells, and those cells do get damaged by direct contact with the essential oils. Now, of course, the cells of the respiratory lining would also be damaged if essential oils came directly in contact with them. And so, for example, some people have been told or came to the wrong conclusion about using essential oils undiluted in the sinuses. Well, that's going to badly burn the sinuses. I think it's common sense that people should know, don't put essential oils in your sinuses. But because essential oils are being treated so lightly, and they're people are being told all of these extended uses of it, I think it's relatively easy for people to get confused and think, oh, well, I can put drops of essential oils in my nostrils. Well, that's going to damage the mucous membrane of your sinuses, and I have seen some cases. And what I can tell you is that that is a very, very painful experience that's going to take a long time to heal, and you might actually lose your sense of smell. You may end up with some pretty serious damage if you try to put drops of even the respiratory oils like eucalyptus that are relatively mild. So the reason that the essential oils are so good for the mucous membrane of the lungs and sinuses is because the way we're using them is highly diluted. So the same thing I'll just mention, do not pour essential oils into your ears. Some people have done that. I will give a specific recipe for what you can do safely for treating the ears. And I don't think I need to mention that you do not put essential oils directly in your eyes. But I will mention, do not put essential oils directly in your eyes, because there have been some reported cases where people got the wrong idea. Somebody told them, some uneducated person told them, and they damaged their eyes by putting essential oils in it. So as I just gave a little social commentary, medical, political commentary, the level of misunderstanding and ignorance about this is profound. And so, okay, so we are continuing on just reviewing from last week, the tridoshic nature of essential oils. We talked about how to use different groups of essential oils for vata, pitta, kapha, introduced what that meant, linked that to antibiotic, probiotic, and eubiotic benefits. And that's basically another way to understand regulating the mucous membrane terrain and the end result of regulating or improving the health of the mucous membrane of the respiratory system is that we have improved immune functions. And so we talked about how our immunity is benefited from using essential oils. We talked then about therapeutics, and this is where we're going to transition into some more discussion, recipes, and so forth, because I know you want practical information, how many drops, and what do you do with it. So we started getting into some recipes for relaxing the respiratory system and for general cough. And I also mentioned herbs that went along with that for general respiratory health and cough. Then I introduced some basic blending methods, how you use your plastic pipette and how you make a synergy. And that's the starting point for more advanced applications, is that you would like to be able to blend some oils. And so I will just mention here that when we transition out of this module, I will ask everybody if they have any stories about blending or making anything, making any of these recipes. And then we talked about how you add different oils from different groups to the synergy according to what you would like. And so we also talked about how to make a simple salve for chest rubs, and we talked about cough syrups, and that is the one exception to taking essential oils internally that we've covered so far in some detail, and I gave you the reasons why. It has to do with the oils being relatively safe from a quality control level. It also has to do with the extreme dilution that is found, and it also is based on the understanding that you must not use it for an extended period of time and just do it for one very specific thing. Okay, now, we're going to finish the respiratory system information, and so I will go ahead and give you a little information here now on the treatment of the common cold. Okay, now, the common cold is something we're all familiar with. It is a viral condition. And something that many people are also familiar with is being prescribed antibiotics for an upper viral respiratory condition, and that is one of the primary reasons of building up antibiotic-resistant strains of bacteria is because overuse of antibiotics. So we're familiar with the general body sensations, symptoms, and signs, body aches, stuffy nose, congestion, sneezing, sore throat, headache, fever, all these kind of things. And so sometimes we might want to think of it in terms of vata, pitta, kapha, which is basically more of a presentation of dryness. Okay, so if you're getting a dry cough, dry throat, and so forth, more dryness represents more vata. And so you want to think more about using the essential oils in steam, in the shower, steam inhalation, and so forth, hot compresses. Pitta, of course, is going to be more presentation of the high fever and the sore throat and the general overheating of the body, whereas kapha is really more the presentation of congestion. So what would we like to do? Well, first of all, we would like to prevent the colds. And that is one of the things that I have seen repeatedly in using essential oils in the diffuser over a period of time. Now, I would also like to mention that there's a treatment that is actually very common around the world and part of yoga tradition and part of hydrotherapy, and that is using alternating hot shower with cold rinse. And a hot shower, of course, is an excellent place to use a few of the respiratory oils. Just take a couple drops of eucalyptus, rub it on your chest in the hot shower. But if you have a propensity towards colds and flus, and you have a weak immune system and you get things frequently, You need to take care of the diet, and you need to have a good herbal program to build your immune system up. And the first group of herbs we think about are the aromatic herbs, like drinking Tulsi tea and peppermint and chamomile and rosemary and so forth. I will review this again in the digestive module. But a very simple thing you can do is to do the alternating hot-cold rinse. Now, if you have a cardiac condition, do not do this, or do it very, very mildly, okay, because obviously going from hot to cold can stress your heart. But if you are in relative good health in the cardiac department and you just want to strengthen your immune system, then this actually strengthens the nervous system, and the nervous system plays a huge role in strengthening the immune system. So what you do is you just start off with a hot shower, a few drops of essential oils that are safe on the chest to be applied through the dilution of the steam, and then you give yourself a lukewarm rinse, go back to hot, give yourself a cool rinse, go back to hot, give yourself a cold rinse, and that will build your immunity and your resistance. And that, of course, is the concept behind going into hot springs and then getting out and taking a cold plunge. And so if you can build yourself up to that, what will happen is that you'll have a tremendous improvement in your overall immunity and vitality and nervous strength, and you'll sleep really well, good for circulation, many, many benefits, a very simple hydrotherapy kind of approach, and essential oils fit very nicely into that, okay? So with the common cold, then, we basically use the essential oils to support the respiratory system, to enhance the immune system, and also to expectorate the congestion of the mucus. And so here's now a list of some oils, and these are directly related to files that you got last week, but I'm also going to be giving you this information on a specific file within the next week, so you can take notes. It's going to be on the audio recording. You can listen to the you can read the transcript, and I will also give this to you on a file. And the most important essential oils for the common cold, for the upper respiratory viral infection, what do you think? It's going to be eucalyptus. And we could also think in terms of the general respiratory oils that we saw for cough and general respiratory well-being, and we can include rosemary. Okay, so those would be a couple of the core oils: eucalyptus and rosemary for the common cold. And then there are several essential oils that come from the spice department, and these are actually really nice to also include in treatment for common cold, not just as essential oils but also as spices. And one of my favorite of the essential oils and spices is cardamom. And so cardamom can be added to your therapeutic approach, and then ginger. And so if we look at what we have here, we're starting to see the outline of the basic respiratory herbs, eucalyptus and rosemary, and a couple of the aromatic spice oils, cardamom and ginger. And then we also have the antimicrobials, and you have already been introduced to some of these names, but we haven't covered them in detail. Neuli, for example, is a melaleuca, a botanical relative of tea tree, and then ravensar, which you will be receiving information on in a future monograph, and then tea tree, and then thyme. Okay, so this gives us the basic approach. We can also see frequently that for upper respiratory viral infections, lavender and the other flower oils are used. Okay, so this then guides you in making your synergy in using these oils in blends. And so what we see is, the core respiratory oils, eucalyptus and rosemary, a few spices, cardamom and ginger, flower oils, lavender, that's a nice one, geranium sometimes goes in for colds and flus also. Sometimes citrus oils are added as well. Okay, so most of the citruses actually have nice effects for the upper respiratory viral infection. Many people also add peppermint, okay, but I'm very cautious with peppermint, using an extremely low dilution. And then the antimicrobials, Robinsar, major oil for the common cold. If there's going to be one oil out of all these things that I picked, if you only have one oil to treat the common cold, it is Robinsar, Robinsara aromatica. That's the main one. Now, tea tree, of course, very antimicrobial, gives a lot of benefit to especially the sinus infection. Also very good for the cold. And then thyme is also used. Okay, so how would you like to do it? Well, you know how to make a synergy, and that means that you are basically just taking some core oils and putting them together. And so let's see. How would you like to do it? Well, why don't you just take one from each of those groups? How about eucalyptus? How about some tea tree? How about some rosemary? How about a little bit of lavender? Okay, these are all things that are very, very easy to mix in different proportions. You don't have to worry so much about the fragrance, because it's really, this is not fine perfume making. It's very easy to make these all at equal parts. If you're going to put peppermint in that, drop the dose way, way down. So if you have something like 10 parts of eucalyptus and you're going to put the peppermint in there, my suggestion is do peppermint at one part, okay? So you could do 10 parts eucalyptus, 10 parts rosemary, one part, two parts peppermint. Tea tree is pretty strong, so how about 5 parts of tea tree? And then you can easily do 10 parts on the lavender. So is this starting to make sense? Eucalyptus, rosemary, 10 parts, lavender, 10 parts, and peppermint, 1 or 2 parts. What else would we like to use? Okay, here's an idea. How about laurel? Okay, and the botanical name is Laurus nobilis. Let's open up the monograph file and let's skip over and read about laurel. This is a beautiful oil. This is one of my favorites. This would be in the file from 2 modules ago, which I instructed you to open up, monographs, modules 4 and 5, laurel. So let's look at laurel oil. Open the file, monographs 4 and 5. You'll see the list there, inula, fir, laurel, monarda. We've covered inula, we covered fir, we covered monarda. Let's look at the laurel. So please scroll down. And if you are not following this directly, don't worry about it, because it's all there. You can listen to the audio. So laurel is the Laurus nobilis. Okay, now this is very different than the California bay laurel. Some of you may be familiar with that on the West Coast. It's not that. That's a different species. It's a different essential oil completely. And those of you who are familiar with that tree know that it is very nice to chew on that leaf, but it is very, very strong, very irritant, and we don't use that very much. So the laurel oil comes from the laurel tree in Europe, which is very, very different. It's not the large trunk. It doesn't grow in the shady canyons of California. It's a Mediterranean tree. It's a completely different species. So if you look here at the overview, it's got a long history of use, and it's especially for the respiratory tract because it is decongestive and expectorant. So I'm introducing this now. Laurel is an excellent essential oil for upper respiratory infections. It's also very good for stimulating peripheral circulation and for rheumatic conditions of the muscles. And that's very similar to eucalyptus. And if you look down, you'll see in the next section that it's very rich in cineol. Well, cineol is also known as eucalyptol. So it actually has a eucalyptus-like fragrance. And eugenol. Eugenol is one of the compounds that makes clove smell and taste like clove. So it also has a kind of clove and a slightly cinnamon type of note. It's a beautiful, beautiful oil. So in aromatherapy, it's used specifically for ear, nose, and throat and respiratory ailments. And so you can now add this to your home pharmacy. And Laurel also has a significant effect, just like the conifers do, on increasing our alertness and awareness, clearing our mind, giving us a positive mood. Laurel also does that, and maybe even stronger, I think. So in looking at the therapeutic actions, we see that it has affinity for the respiratory system, and like eucalyptus and the conifers, it also has affinity for the musculoskeletal, lymphatic, and circulatory systems, but it fights the infections, cold, flus, boosts the immune system by enhancing oxygenation, and that's something that also comes from the conifer oils and the eucalyptus oils, as we have talked about. It's a very invigorating kind of fragrance, and anything that's really invigorating we could call tonic, okay? That means that it is stimulating to the body and the mind. So this is not a relaxing oil. It's not a type of stimulant like drinking too much espresso. Essential oils, when we classify them as either relaxant or stimulant, we have to remember that the effects are much more subdued than if we're taking something internally. So if we drink very strong kava in a South Pacific ceremony, that's where we're going to feel real relaxation. If we're breathing relaxing oils, we are not going to get that kind of heavy narcotic sort of feeling. We'll feel a lighter kind of relaxation. Likewise, when we talk about stimulant oils, we're talking about a more subtle type of stimulation than if we were to drink a large amount of a caffeine-containing drink, for example. So if we go through, just look briefly here, therapeutic actions, it is mucolytic and it is expectorant. And so you would like to think about this as a warming oil, primarily for anti-kapha. And it does have a little bit of that feeling of spiciness because of the eugenol, but it also has a kind of menthol cooling property. But what matters, as you'll remember from the discussion on how the oils are tridoshic, what really matters is what is the effect. And the effect is mucolytic and expectorant, which means it's going to loosen the phlegm and help cough it out. So it's especially helpful then for the kapha congestion. Okay, so chronic and acute bronchitis, sinusitis, asthma, sore throat, laryngitis, unclogged with sinuses, and so forth. So I'll just let you read through the other secondary uses. This is really the primary use, in my opinion, is for the respiratory system. And here are a few things that you can do. These methods are going to become very familiar to you because they are very redundant. In a lot of ways, even advanced aromatherapy is very fundamental. Okay, there's not a whole lot of things you can do with the oils in terms of a vast range of preparations and applications as compared to herbal medicine, for example. So applied topically in safe dilutions, that's okay as a compress. You know, safe dilutions in this case, I would say 1-2%. Compress, so you can actually put the laurel oil on a hot, wet towel and just put it on your chest, a couple drops in the bath. Direct inhalation or diffuser, okay? So that's using this as a single note oil. And again, you can use it for muscles and joints. And here is a nice additional comment, lymphatic drainage. So some oils really have that lymph moving kind of property. And so if you've got the upper respiratory viral infection and you've got a lot of congestion in the neck or throat, then you would think of that. And I gave you a recipe last week on how to make a salve, and if you put the castor oil in it, it has a special affinity for helping to move the lymph system, and especially for the neck. So 1-2% dilution in a carrier oil for local massage, muscular and joint pain, support lymphatic function. You can also use laurel oil, direct palm inhalation, directly to the sinuses. Don't do it too strong. Don't do it too many times. You can end up burning your sinuses, dehydrating the sinuses, but do it and it'll open the sinus. Just do it moderately, 1-2 drops. Do that 3, 4, 5 times a day is fine. And it will open the sinuses if they're congested, and it will also clear the mind. Very nice in the diffuser, air freshener. And here's a nice recipe here for you that's directly related to our topic of colds and flus, and that is for prevention. Here's a chest rub. This is also excellent for treatment, actually. 2 drops of laurel, 3 drops of eucalyptus, 3 drops of robinsar, 3 drops of lavender. So you can see that these all have equal parts. Laurel is a little bit more concentrated, and that's one of the things that you're going to learn just by experimenting and looking at these formulas. You're going to learn that there's different groups of oils in terms of intensity and dosage. So something like eucalyptus and lavender, robinsar, they're all basically at the same level. But then something like oregano, cinnamon, they're way, way down. They're like, you know, 1 part to 10 parts, okay? And then a lot of the antimicrobials like tea tree, they're kind of halfway in between. Now, this is something I can put together in a file for you, but also a lot of it is just common sense. Cinnamon oil is just far more concentrated and problematic than eucalyptus oil or lavender oil, for example. So here's another recipe, decongestant and expectorant. And you can see here, this is very flexible. You know, when I say 2 drops of laurel, 2 drops eucalyptus, 2 drops cedar, 4 drops frankincense, 4 drops juniper, not only are the doses very flexible, but the oils are very flexible. Okay, so, you know, you could substitute rosemary for the eucalyptus. You could substitute myrtle for the laurel. You could substitute pinon pine for the juniper. You see, so it's a very, very flexible thing, and what we're working with is larger groups of oils that all share very similar therapeutic benefits, and that's why we can do that, all right? So eucalyptus, yes. There are some species that would be best, like, for example, the radiata and the globulus are very interchangeable, and you would choose those for these functions over something like the eucalyptus macarthurii, which is the rose-scented eucalyptus, which does not have the same fragrance, does not have the same chemistry, and has a much milder effect on the respiratory system. But these are just the details that we learn as we go along. Okay, so let's skip down, because there was one other that I wanted to touch on here that's a beautiful essential oil, which is myrtle. And if you just keep on scrolling, since we're almost there, we can talk about that. And let me just double check here to make sure that we did not cover. Okay, no, we did not cover that. Myrtle oil is also a very, very excellent oil for upper respiratory viral infections, for colds and flus, and boosting immunity. Okay, so now you're expanding your palette of essential oils for treating respiratory conditions to bring in a few that have very unique properties and that are a bit stronger. And we're going to continue with this thread for quite a while, actually, because as we bring in more oils in different modules, we're also going to be touching back on the respiratory modules as well. So a lot of this becomes kind of cumulative over time. So the myrtle oil is very, very nice. I've experienced both the myrtle and the laurel oils coming from Corsica, where Sarah and I have been twice and spent quite a bit of time with the distillers, and the plants are beautiful. And they perfume the ecosystem of the island, and the oils are really very, very nice. So the oil comes from the leaves and the flowers, and it's very harmonious and beneficial. It's not as intense as the laurel and the chemistry. It has a very different kind of chemistry, actually. It's not based on some of those spice compounds like the eugenol or the respiratory compounds like the eucalyptol, cineol. It is based on sesquiterpenes, esters, and alcohols, and you don't have to worry about this. This will gradually seep into our discussions here. Now, these still contain these compounds still give the oil significant antibacterial effects, but also antidepressant, antiseptic, expectorant, immune enhancer, and sedative. Okay, so this is a very different oil, but at the same time, it's very, very important for the respiratory system because it is decongestant, It again boosts the oxygen flow because it is decongestant. It clears the sinuses, opens the lungs, helps recovery in respiratory infections. And so some of you have asked, what do I do for a chronic situation that is still lingering and I'm still having these symptoms? I had this infection and now the acute symptoms are gone, but I'm left with this chronic cough. Well, this is a good oil to think about, okay? Recovery from respiratory infections. And again, what we see is that it's good for the muscles and circulation. So a lot of these respiratory oils cross over. Also, this oil is used a bit more in skin conditions, okay? So if we look at the specific benefits, ear, nose, and throat, soothing to the sore throat, clears the sinuses, and stimulant to the immune system. How would we like to use it? We can just go ahead and scroll down, since I imagine that most of you or all of you have already read these thoroughly. So this can be applied in the proper dilution, topically in the massage oils, a compress, in the bath, direct inhalation or diffuser, same methods. And then you can see one drop of myrtle oil and carrier oil for the skin, 1 to 2 drops in 1 ounce for massage oil for circulation, and so forth. Okay, now let's look at a couple more things in the respiratory system and then close this up a little bit. So there are several other topics that we could cover, and I think what I want to do is come back to this a little bit, because we do want to get started with our digestive discussion, but I also want to just mention a few things very briefly. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to condense all of this. I gave you the expanded version. Now I'm going to condense all of this, and I will give this to you in a file to follow up so that you will have all the notes. You won't be losing anything because we are running out of time. So bronchitis is our next topic, and I don't need to go into all of the specific details of bronchitis. It's generally a bacterial infection. It is, it can be viral also, but it's a deeper type of infection than the upper respiratory cold. I just want to give you the primary essential oils. The core essential oils for this are very similar, actually, to the core oils for treating the flu. Treating viral infections, colds. We see cardamom, and we see ginger, and we see eucalyptus, and we see laurel, and again, the antibiotic, antimicrobial oils, tea tree, neuli, and we also see thyme, and we also see rosemary. So the same core group of oils can be used for deeper infections of the lungs, but then we also see the use of cinnamon oil, okay? Now, cinnamon oil is extremely, extremely powerful. It can be used, however, for deeper infections. So it is a much stronger oil, because bronchitis really needs a stronger type of antibiotic. And then we also see the essential oil of savory, okay? And this is a very, very famous antimicrobial oil, and I will give you some information on that. So these are two spice oils. We have the other spice oils that are still there, such as the rosemary and the thyme and the peppermint. Those can also be used. We have the laurel. We have ginger from the spice oils, but we also have cinnamon and savory. And so that's kind of like the main difference. It gets a lot stronger when you add those. So how do we want to do this? Well, you want to create your synergy, of course, and you want to use these oils in 5 to 10% dilution. Okay, you can put them on chest and the back in a salve. You know how to do that now. You know how to make a salve. You know the proportions for 5 to 10% dilution. That doesn't mean you can put a 10% dilution of cinnamon oil on there. Okay, it means that you should put the cinnamon oil in the blend in extreme dilutions. And if you're going to have cinnamon oil, you need to adjust the formula down. So You can also use your blend with steam inhalation. Okay, so there's several other oils that are really good, and you could make a simple synergy. Here's an idea. You could do something with Tulsi oil, because Tulsi is very, very strong and very similar to laurel oil, actually. So you could use equal parts of Tulsi oil and eucalyptus and lavender, okay, something like that. And then you could use that in the steam. You could use it in the salve. You could use it in the diffuser. And then you could also start to add the other oils a little bit at a time. So let's say that you make a blend from 10 parts Tulsi, 10 parts eucalyptus, 10 parts lavender, and then you want to use cinnamon. I would say 1 or 2 parts cinnamon to that blend, okay, and that's going to keep it quite safe. But then also keep in mind that because you have the cinnamon and you have the Tulsi, which are very, very hot and potentially dermotoxic, you want to bring that down when you put it in your salve. Keep it at the low end, 5%. Okay, so if you're just making a salve out of eucalyptus and lavender, it's very easy to go up to a higher dilution. So after a while, these things will just become like second nature to you. You'll just automatically think lavender, eucalyptus are safer. You can use a higher concentration, more parts, and so forth. Okay, so very, very brief information on bronchitis. And I did want to touch, we'll just keep going here for just a couple more minutes. I did want to touch on one thing, and that is that I gave you a file on the protocols for withdrawals, and that's especially helpful for nicotine, and I hope that you read all of that. It's basically just a sequence of building yourself up, improve the diet, get stronger nutritional support, start doing increased relaxation practices, start getting some natural treatments, some massage and acupuncture, gradually bring in some of the herbs, start using the essential oils. Do all of that for a period of time, even for several months, before you actually tackle the nicotine directly. Now, there are some oils that I wanted to mention, and I think that we'll transition out of the respiratory department now and transition over to the digestive system with a short break for any testimonials or questions. But I wanted to mention that there's a couple oils that are really helpful for treating nicotine withdrawal and stopping smoking. And, of course, you would think of your basic synergy of oils that will be good for the lungs, and those would be eucalyptus and rosemary and so forth. But a lot of times you also want to think about the relaxant oils such as the flowers, the lavender, maybe even a little bit of ylang ylang, maybe the geranium, things that are also calming, because really nicotine covers up anxiety and depression. And when people stop smoking, that anxiety and depression starts to come out, and that's why the craving is so intense, because people are actually really nervous. Or they feel depressed, and the nicotine will help them to cope with that. So there's a very strong emotional component that we're dealing with, and so if we use aromatherapy for the emotional side of it, it really helps a lot, and especially if it's combined with massage and acupuncture, the whole relaxation process really helps to detoxify. And the way this works is to remember that sleep detoxifies. We detoxify. We are detoxifying continuously, but good deep sleep is very detoxifying, and relaxation is very detoxifying. And so therefore, massage, acupuncture, relaxing aromatherapy is very detoxifying. And then additionally, when we use the respiratory oils, then we are also helping to start to clean up the terrain of the respiratory mucous membrane. So the core synergies of eucalyptus and rosemary, things like that, are going to be very, very helpful. And then we also think about some of the sacred scents in treating withdrawals. Palo Santo, frankincense, those can also be brought in the diffuser or in our blend, chest rubs, steam inhalations, and all of that, because the sacred scents have always been used for respiratory conditions. But here, there's an emotional component, and that's why they can also be very beneficial because they're very relaxing. Palo Santo, for example, has a very significant anti-anxiety effect. There are two specific oils that I want to mention. One is called Bupleurum. Now, this is not widely available. This is something that we carry. It is something that I found at a small distillery in Corsica. And I asked my friend Pierre, the distiller, I said, what do you use Bupleurum for? And he said, it helps with nicotine withdrawal. All right, so there's a very simple answer. Is there any information about it? No, it's a unique herb. It's a unique distillation, unique essential oil. But because of my background in Chinese medicine, I knew that this is a very close botanical relative of the Bupleurum chinensis, Chai Hu. And if we look at the use of Chai Hu, we see that it is good for relaxing the congestion of the liver qi. Well, congestion of the liver qi means emotional tension. And emotional tension is what people smoke for, to help to relax. And so therefore, whenever you smoke a cigarette, it helps to relax your liver qi congestion. And if you don't get it, your liver qi becomes congested. And so you have to find other ways to relax your liver qi congestion other than nicotine. So Bupleurum is a specific oil, and it can be used in the diffuser. But I actually made a blend, and I'll tell you about it in a moment. And another essential oil that is very specific for nicotine withdrawal, and this does have some research backing it up, several oils were tested to see which one is actually the most calming and helps the most, and the one that came out at the top of the list was black pepper. So we'll use black pepper as a transition into the topic of the digestive oils, and I will mention that I made a blend specifically for nicotine withdrawal. I'll go ahead and give you the recipe. You can make it yourself, or we have it available. It is called Craving Control. And we actually did a survey of people who used this. It wasn't a huge survey, but the majority of people, 75% or more, actually said that it either gave them really good support or excellent support in stopping smoking. So the recipe, I believe, I'm just doing this right off the top of my head, but it is pretty close to this. And again, it's an inexact science. You can make your own version of it, or you can just buy the one that we have. The recipe is 8 parts of Eucalyptus radiata. That's one of my favorite eucalypti species, and it is very sweet. And of course, that's the core oil for the respiratory system. Then 4 parts of black pepper. And black pepper, from the olfactory standpoint, is actually a relatively mild oil. It doesn't burn. It's not pungent like cinnamon. And then 2 parts of Bupleurum. And Bupleurum has a very strong olfactory presence. It's very rooty and earthy and spicy. And so, again, recipe, 8 parts Eucalyptus radiata, 4 parts black pepper, 2 parts Bupleurum. And you can use that direct palm inhalation, diffuser, chest rub, steam, all the usual methods. And it will have a nice expectorating effect. That's what the eucalyptus will do. And then the Bupleurum will circulate your liver qi, relax your liver qi stagnation, and the black pepper will help because it has a special property that has been researched. Okay, I am now going to stop with the respiratory therapeutics, but since it is so important, I am going to find a way to come back to respiratory therapeutics and certainly get you a lot more information in the files. So, Colleen, why don't we pause and see if anybody would like to call in, raise their hand for any wonderful testimonials about how you've been feeling using the oil so far, any new webcast questions, and so forth. So why don't we just pause for a short transition here.
Okay, thank you so much. So please, if you have a question or a sharing for David and the rest of us, of course, please press 1 on your telephone keypad, and otherwise you can type in directly into the webcast. And we'll start with a question from the webcast. This is from Elise, and she has eucalyptus, or he Dives, is it as effective as the other eucalyptus that you just mentioned?
Okay, that's a good question about a specific species of eucalyptus, and it is spelled D-I-V-E-S. Eucalyptus dives or Dives. I actually don't know how it is pronounced. It could be both. Is it as effective as other eucalypti? Yes, it is. The interesting thing with this particular species is that it is very high in menthol fragrance. And I don't know if that's actually because it contains menthol. I believe it does, but here my ignorance is apparent. I believe that they might actually distill menthol out of this particular species. So it's peppermint-scented eucalyptus, a very strong peppermint scent. And so this is actually a good species to substitute for peppermint. Because you've heard me say many times that peppermint is actually problematic. Now, it's not just the peppermint oil that's problematic, it's the menthol content. And I will do a little research on this to confirm it, but if this eucalyptus species actually does have the menthol and not some other compound that makes it smell like mint, then the compound could still be irritant to some people. So I would say that it could be used as a substitute for peppermint and probably safer because it's not so concentrated and it also has dual functions because it is also a eucalyptus oil. But for people who are very sensitive to the mint oil, it may not be the right thing. So very good. I have this on the webcast. I will unpack it a bit next week. Okay, and one more here on the webcast unless somebody is calling in.
We do have someone that is calling in.
Okay, let's go ahead and take that call then.
Okay, thank you. Gaia, go ahead, please.
Well, hi, this is Gaia, and I'm wondering about essential oils and if you've done any experimentation or know of anyone who's done any with working with, like, let's say, as an acupuncturist, there's points, acupuncture points on the body. I'm going to use an example, stomach 36. And because that would be a good point for digestion, we'll say stomach. What about using essential oils neat or diluted, depending on the oil, that would be good for digestion on the stomach 36 point? Have you played around with that and you have any thoughts on that? And that's just one example. That could be one example of very many points.
Right, exactly. No, that's an excellent question. And yes, there is a system that has been devised. There are two systems, actually, that I know about. One is the traditional system from Ayurveda, and they use the classical attars and essential oils like vetiver oil and rose oil, and sandalwood oil, things like that that have been produced in India for a very long time. These oils are incorporated into marma treatment, okay? And so marma treatment is actually acupressure according to the Ayurvedic system of points, and there's a lot of crossover. The major points are the same as in Chinese medicine, and they have a few unique points that Chinese medicine doesn't have. And so the classical fragrances from India, and that also includes the attars, okay, which you learned about in Module 1. These are classical distillations of various flowers and roots and woods and so forth into a base of sandalwood, and that is what they were used for. The attars were used specifically for marma therapy. So therefore, gentle touch of the third eye point would also include the application of an attar to the third eye point or an oil to the chest point. So that is a wonderful system. That would actually be a complete course just to study what oils go on what marma points and why. And then also the use of the oils, as you're talking about with the Chinese meridian and acupuncture point system, has also been developed into a modern system by a gentleman by the name of Jeffrey Yuen, and he's very well known in the acupuncture community. He's a Taoist priest and a Chinese medicine expert. He's not an acupuncturist as far as I know, but he teaches Chinese medicine, and he has developed a system of using essential oils, correlating them to the acupuncture points. I have not studied it in detail, but what I have seen of the information is quite substantial, good reasoning behind it, and that, of course, is the main thing we want to look for, because really all we're concerned with is, does it work? And I would say, for example, would it work to put a particular digestive oil, let's say cardamom oil or fennel oil? Would a digestive oil like that applied to stomach 36 and then needled, would that have a direct effect on the digestive system? And I would say it would have an indirect effect. It would certainly have some kind of local effect on the acupuncture point. There'd be a very indirect effect from the fragrance itself, and so forth. But then let's compare that to one of the primary methods we're going to learn now in the digestive module, and that is abdominal massage with fennel oil. Okay, so obviously, abdominal massage with fennel oil is going to be treating the digestive system directly. It's going to be treating a larger area. It's going to be getting in through abdominal absorption, and there's going to be a lot more fragrance that's going to be stimulating the digestive system through the olfactory system. And so I would say that there are several methods of using essential oils for the digestive system that are much more direct. And we could say the same thing about any of the acupuncture points. Like, for example, we could say, well, what about lung meridian? Well, we could say, well, what about chest compresses instead of just the lung meridian? But it doesn't have to be either or. It could be both. You see, and that's the beauty of it, is that you could do some respiratory oils on the lung meridian points and needle them, and you could use the oils on the chest in a compress also. So that's the short answer, and if you would like a little bit more detail, what you could do is you could go ahead and type that into the webcast, and I will go ahead and respond on that particular file. But I hope that was a helpful answer. Good question. Thank you.
Just need the spelling of Jeffrey's last name.
Y-U-E-N.
Y-U-E-N, that makes sense. And then,
right, exactly. He's
and then I wonder about the best place on the body to do a test patch if you're going to check for dermatotoxicity. Like, where would you do the test patch?
Someplace not visible. How about in the inner upper arm?
Because I was thinking if it was colon-related, you could do it like to Cohen 4-point or something as your test patch with an oil that was specific. I mean, I'm just wondering, you know.
No, the reason that you do a test patch is you want to just make sure that you're not going to get an adverse reaction. And if you are going to get an adverse reaction, of course, you don't want it to be a cosmetic problem, so I don't suggest doing a test patch like right on your third eye, because if you get a rash on your third eye, then everybody will see it. So, you could put it on your upper arm somewhere. That's a fairly standard place to put it. Okay, good question. Thank you. Now, let's go ahead and transition into the digestive module. Now, one of the basic things we're going to learn in the digestive module is that there's very limited uses of essential oils. And that's why I took some time. We're going to be catching up with all the stuff. There's no shortage of information in the digestive modules. Sometimes the schedule just gets pushed back a bit. But overall, the essential oils are not the primary treatment for digestive problems. They are supportive and they are secondary. And this is very different than the respiratory system, because the essential oils, as you know, is primary, and I could just keep on going with more and more and more recipes for treating all kinds of things for the respiratory system, because really that's where essential oils and aromatherapy is really strong. Essential oils and aromatherapy is helpful for digestive conditions, but it is so problematic when it comes to the internal use, as you know, that it's very limited also. So what we're going to study then are, well, how can we use these oils? And one of the things we're going to find is you can't in a lot of ways, and so we have to look at alternatives. So there are three primary methods that we can think about when we are talking about using essential oils for the digestive system. And one is that you can use inhalation of essential oils in different ways, and the inhalation will affect the digestive tract. So there's two main categories of oils that we can use here. One is the essential oils that come from the culinary herbs and spices, and I'm going to unpack all of these different types here shortly, so you will know what I mean, but obviously spices are things like cinnamon and oregano, and lots of culinary herbs and medicinal herbs such as ginger and tulsi and peppermint. All of these aromatic plants give essential oils, and smelling those essential oils activates the digestive system. So here is a method. If you have the perfume strips, you can use them. That's the best way, easiest. If you don't, you can just use a tissue, and you put a couple drops on the tissue. Several of the oils are okay for direct palm inhalation, but many of the spice oils are not okay. You don't want to be putting cinnamon oil on your hands and then putting it up near your face. So use a perfume strip. That's a preferable method. But go ahead and put those spice oils on there. Put oregano oil on there. Put cinnamon on. Put tulsi. Put clove. And then bring it to your nostrils and breathe it deeply. So I have given you the instructions on how to do a contemplative approach to essential oils. And if you do this with the spice oils, you will notice almost always that the spice oils work on the digestive system. And basically, what they do is they stimulate. They have an appetizing effect. Okay, so this is one group of oils, spice oils, one method, perfume strip. One therapeutic application, and that is loss of appetite. Well, if you think about that, aromatherapy can actually be very, very important in this specific case. So what is that? Patients who are going through chemotherapy, any kind of anorexia, nausea, vomiting, any time a person is losing their appetite for an extended period of time, or just keeping the appetite strong, and our appetite does tend to go down as we become older. Hydrochloric acid secretion goes down as we become older. And so being around the fragrance of the spice plants is very, very important. And we don't have to do it just with essential oils either. We can do it with the plants themselves. And that's why it's so nice to have an herb garden and to harvest the plants fresh and to cook with them fresh, because that entire process strengthens the digestive system. So this is going to be the main approach that we're going to be talking about, is indirect uses. Okay, now that's a healthy way of using essential oils, and we do not need to take them internally at all for that particular purpose. We just smell them, and because of the link between inhalation and the brain, the limbic system, the vagus nerve, and the digestive system, we can use essential oils for stimulating the appetite, for their appetizing effect, and using it to activate appetite for people who have lost it. So there's a big group of people, and this is a very important, very, very simple way of doing it. Then we have another group of oils that is also extremely beneficial for the digestive system, and those are the relaxant oils. Now, we're going to be talking about the relaxant oils in quite a lot of detail in future modules, but the relaxant oils are going to be things like lavender, clary sage, ylang ylang. It's going to be things that will be very good in massage, very calming. And why are these good for digestion? Well, because so many digestive problems come from chronic nervous tension. And so the more that we can relax the nervous system, the better our digestion will be. Okay, so that's another big group of oils, many, many oils, and many, many applications to help the digestive system. So what we're starting with then, stimulate the appetite through the sense of smell with spice oils, help the digestive system relax with relaxant flower oils, and we can see that there's tremendous support just through inhalation, not even doing anything else. Now, another major method that we're going to start exploring is the abdominal massage. And there are several really good essential oils that are used and recommended in aromatherapy for abdominal massage. And those include things like ginger that are warming and appetizing and stimulant. Some things that are also very appetizing, like cardamom. Fennel is also very good. And then those things that are also antispasmodic, like chamomile. Chamomile oil is frequently used in abdominal massage as well. Now, of course, we're not putting these on undiluted, so we're talking about making a standard blend. And those particular oils that I mentioned are very, very safe. Ginger is a little more heating to the skin, so you want to keep the ginger oil down to 2 to 5% maximum in the blend. But with a lot of the oils, especially something like chamomile, you can easily go up to 5 to 10%. Now, don't worry, you're going to get the recipes, you'll get the files. I'm just giving you the brief introduction here. Now, one of the advantages of using the essential oils this way, of course, is because it's combined with the massage. So it's not just the oil that's working to benefit the digestive system and giving the decongesting and the circulation enhancing effects, the antispasmodic relaxing effects. It's also the massage that's doing it. And when the essential oils are applied in a type of carrier oil, they're also nicely assimilated into the abdominal circulation. And in some cases, we can see that there are some benefits to actually using the whole plant form for an abdominal compress. And so, for example, from macrobiotic healing, we learned that you can make a ginger compress for several things that are related to the abdomen, both digestive problems and menstrual discomfort. And you just take a ginger root, a fresh ginger root, throw it in a blender, add enough water to make a puree, and apply that to the belly. It can be the whole belly. It can be the upper belly for digestive. It could be the lower belly for uterine discomfort, cramping, menstrual cramping. Cover it with a plastic, and then put a hot, wet towel over it, or a heating pad, or a hot water bottle or something. And what that does then is it warms the ginger puree, and that warms the skin, and the pores open and relax, and the ginger oil goes in through the skin, and it has a remarkable relaxing effect on the small intestine, large intestine, uterus, abdominal circulation. So the abdomen is very receptive to absorbing things from the outside that are put on the skin, and that's a good example. So that's another method that we'll be talking about. And of course, when you do something like that with essential oils, if you're giving a massage with fennel oil, cardamom oil, then it's also going to have the appetite stimulant effect as well as the abdominal relaxing effect. So it's going to be benefiting the digestive system through two simultaneous routes, through the olfactory system and directly through touch. Then we come to the third primary method, and this is where we're going to focus the most, actually, because what really helps the digestive system is the use of the aromatic plants as teas. And I know that many people think very highly of essential oils, and they think very highly of internal use of essential oils, but it's really not necessary, and because there's so much high risk, we look at the alternative. And so what we're doing when we use the aromatic plants, it's very simple. We just make a tea out of tulsi, we make a tea out of peppermint, and we receive the essential oils in the way that nature gave them to us, without any distillation, extraction, or concentrating. And so therefore, the term that you have heard me say many times is biocompatible. And therefore, if you drink peppermint tea, you are getting your peppermint essential oil in a biocompatible form. You do not need to take more than that, because that's all the body needs. And this is something that people don't realize, is that the concentration level of the essential oils in the aromatic plants is perfect. It's just exactly how it should be for treating the digestive system. And if you even concentrate those plants too much, too strong a concentration of peppermint, you know, if you took a full cup of dry peppermint leaf and you made it into an espresso, for example, the essential oil content is going to start to get too high just from that. So the idea here is the plants are the best for the digestive system. And there's a very large list. I'm going to unpack those for you and also put them on a file. But what people need to understand is that all of these spices, the common spices that are in the kitchen, the common culinary herbs that come from the garden or from the farmer's market, people underestimate how beneficial they are. They have a wide range of benefits for the digestive system. They are carminative, gets rid of gas. They are antispasmodic, gets rid of cramping pain. They are antimicrobial. They are anti-inflammatory. They help with chronic digestive problems. They help overcome candida from antibiotics. They help with irritable bowels. I mean, even fairly complicated chronic digestive problems are cured or greatly benefited by just drinking these simple teas. So in the advanced herbal course that I teach, we have two modules dedicated to using just these aromatic plants. And I call these modules the humble healers. I call these plants the humble healers because people always want something exotic. People always want something from far away. People always want something stronger. More is better. And they don't realize that the lowly common plants, chamomile, so simple, so basic, we don't even think about it. Chamomile tea can cure so many things. So we're going to take that particular approach, and we're going to learn about the aromatic plants for internal use. That's a safe way to do it, and I think that you will be pleasantly surprised. I'm going to give you lots of information to get you started with it. And that way, I am not going to be advising you take these essential oils internally. You've heard me say, okay, take it in the cough syrup. That's for that. Then stop. You've heard me give a little explanation on taking the oregano capsule. I don't even suggest doing that, really. I suggest that you just drink oregano tea, all right, because that's the level that the digestive system feels comfortable with it. The mucous membrane is extremely sensitive, and it likes these teas. It doesn't like essential oils. All right. Now, I'm going to give you a little homework assignment here because time is running out. Now, if you go back to module one, you see you've already received a fair amount of information here. If you go back to module one, there's a file titled Oils According to Prana and Qi. And you'll see here that there's a list of herbs that you can make into tea instead of taking as an essential oil. So I'll just scan through this quickly. You don't have to open it. But we see here oils for energizing the mind and the brain. What were a few of those? Some of you should already have experimented with this. You should already have testimonials that you are finding that your memory is enhanced by inhaling rosemary and laurel and tulsi. Okay. So what would you do with these? Well, rosemary and tulsi, very easy to make a tea out of. Okay, those that were in the category of immune enhancing, frankincense and tulsi. Okay, well, you can't make a tea out of frankincense, but I will once again give you a reminder. A traditional way of using frankincense is to take a tear of the frankincense, one of the little drops of the dry frankincense resin. Get a high quality resin, clear, yellow, clean, put it in your mouth, soften it, then start to chew it up. Chew it like a gum. It's very good for your teeth and gums. Antimicrobial for gingivitis. You can swallow that saliva. You don't need to swallow the resin. But what will happen is that the essential oil content coming out of the frankincense tear will be about 1% of that oleogum resin, and that is a biocompatible level of essential oil of frankincense, and you do not have to risk your life by taking frankincense oil that has potential contamination in it. Okay, just chew the frankincense tear. Now, what will happen is that frankincense oil at that biocompatible level will also be a great medicine for cleansing the stagnation, the gas, the bloating, the microbial fermentation, the bacterial overgrowth, the candida. Something that simple will have a profound effect on your digestive tract. All right, now, scrolling through here, this is just a little exercise. I want you to look at these and I want you to think about which ones you would like to use as teas. Eucalyptus? No. You generally, you know, eucalyptus or the conifers are not generally made into teas. Okay, traditionally they were, but these are medicines and they're much stronger in a certain way. What about the tea tree? Well, not taken as a whole plant form. What about oregano? Okay. Oregano is one that can be added to your tulsi tea. But keep in mind, it's still very, very strong in herb form. So if you add a little bit of oregano to your ginger or your tulsi tea, you're going to get the benefits. Then as we scroll through, we see, well, here's the category of oils for the ojas from the heartwood. Sandalwood, agarwood, cedarwood. No, these are not relevant. How about rose? Yes. Rose petal tea is very, very good for your digestive system. How about jasmine? That is pretty strong. I don't advise. Okay, so rose you can add to something that you can take internally for digestive purposes. Very anti-inflammatory. What about the hot oils according to Yang and Agni? Hot stimulant oils, cinnamon, clove, tulsi, oregano. Yes, absolutely. These are things you can use in your cooking. Cinnamon is actually very biocompatible in the powder form. Put it in your chai. You can cook with a cinnamon bark. Clove, put it in your chai. Cook with it. Put it in your oatmeal. Cook with it, whatever. Tulsi and oregano, I already mentioned. Then, what about the citruses? Well, citrus peels are actually, when they're dried, they are actually used in formulas, in traditional Chinese medicine especially, for helping digestion. And so the citruses cross over as well. Okay, so this is just a little exercise for you. You can go ahead and look at that file. That's just to give you an idea of some of the major spices. And I just want to mention, we should not underestimate the power of spices like cinnamon and clove in their whole plant form. I know everybody is intrigued with them as essential oils, but remember, the reason that Columbus took his three ships off the edge of the world in search of spices was because spices were extremely valuable. Many spices were very high priced. And we say, well, why? Why were these men willing to risk their lives and sail off into space looking for black pepper, okay, looking for cardamom, looking for things like that? It's because they're such powerful medicines. And the use was really because of their antimicrobial benefits for food preservation. And so if these spices were being used so effectively for preserving food in the days before refrigerators, we know that they contain strong compounds. And therefore, we should take these very seriously as medicine in the whole plant form. That's the point I'm going to be making repeatedly. So some of the major aromatic herbs, cardamom, clove, cinnamon, these are all things that you can use in your cooking. And then, of course, tea, chamomile, lemon balm, marjoram, oregano, peppermint, rosemary, thyme, tulsi. These are all things that you can make into tea. And then other things like the ginger you can also cook with. Okay, so this is the introduction to the concept, the introduction to how we're going to approach this topic, because I don't want anybody getting hurt, and I don't want anybody doing anything you don't need to do unnecessarily when there are simpler, safer, better methods. And the best way to conclude is just to say that the aromatic plants are perfect just as they are for the digestive system. Now, the aromatic plants are also perfect for the respiratory system, and that's how Ayurveda uses them. They put the fresh tulsi and the fresh eucalyptus leaves in the steam cabinet, and the essential oils come out in a biocompatible form. We have all kinds of methods now with aromatherapy in the diffuser, using the oils in dilution for chest rubs and direct palm inhalation, but you can't do that with the digestive system. The respiratory system is open to the world, open to the atmosphere, easily receptive to micro droplets in the air. With the digestive system, we have to think of it very, very differently. And so the plants are the best way to do it. Support it through the inhalation and support it through abdominal pressure, massage, acupressure points, and so forth. Okay. Our time, unfortunately, is over, and I did even take extra time to run over. But everything with the respiratory system is extremely important, and I'm going to come back to it, and I'm also going to give you further information and files. This is the introduction to the digestive module, and my suggestion for the week is don't underestimate these plants. And enjoy them. So what can you do? Here is your homework. Drink peppermint tea. Drink tulsi tea. Drink ginger tea. I'm sure everybody knows the basics of how to do it. The simple recipe is about 1 teaspoon of plant material to 1 cup of water. For the roots, like ginger, you simmer it a little bit. For the dried herbs, like peppermint and tulsi, you steep it in the hot water. I will get that information to you for those of you who are not familiar with these basic herbal uses, because I do know that many people are coming to this course without any background, actually, and need to start at the very beginning. But I'm sure that a large majority of people know how to make chamomile tea, and you can always just use the tea bag. You can also chew cardamom seed. You can also chew fennel seed. You can also use the spices in your cooking. So my suggestion is, simple homework assignment, start using these plants more than you already are. If you are already using them extensively, then don't worry about it. You already know the benefits. They're already helping your digestive system. But if you have digestive problems especially, and you are not using these aromatic plants, I highly recommend that you start, because they are the primary form of medicine for treating all kinds of digestive problems. Okay, so Colleen, I'm going to turn it back to you, and we'll see if anybody would like to call in for one final call, or we can look at the webcast for one final question.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, David, from all of us. And please press 1 on your telephone keypad if you'd like to share And I'd like to share just a question from the webcast while we're waiting. This is from Sue. Do you have to be cautious when pregnant using the aromatic plants as teas such as tulsi, oregano, and ginger?
Well, cautious as in common sense, but you do not have to be overly concerned about it. So common sense would be do not take many cups a day of extremely strong oregano tea. If you are putting a little oregano in your tea, just make it a little pinch. And ginger tea throughout pregnancy is fine. Tulsi tea during pregnancy is fine. Peppermint tea during pregnancy is fine. But also consider your individual constitution and your health history. So in general, the use of mild aromatic teas, chewing cardamom seed and fennel seed and so forth, these are very beneficial during pregnancy, and they can be very beneficial in the first trimester and very safe for morning sickness and nausea and so forth. And then throughout the pregnancy, as different types of digestive system symptoms build up, pressure on the stomach, hyperacidity, heartburn, these kind of things, those aromatic plants can be very, very safe and very, very beneficial. We will be studying in the later module specific uses of essential oils during pregnancy, and we will learn that, again, it is something that is best to use the aromatic plants rather than try to take essential oils internally. Now, I will mention that as part of the general public health hazard that's being created by misinformation, there are some individuals who are advocating that pregnant women take essential oils internally during the pregnancy. Well, I don't think that that's wise, especially at the doses that they're recommending, and especially during the first trimester. I think that they're running a very, very high risk. There may be some benefits in some cases, but we don't know, because what we do know is that the essential oils can be absorbed into the fetal. They are absorbed into fetal circulation, and they may have some damaging effects on the fetus. So do not take essential oils internally during pregnancy. That is my position. And as we will learn, there are specific concerns during first pregnancy, the first trimester, with essential oils, but we don't need to get into that right now because that's not your question. That's very specific for a later time. The simple answer is, during pregnancy, tulsi tea, peppermint tea, chamomile tea, ginger tea, those types of standard teas for beverages, especially if they're not highly, highly concentrated, you don't put a couple cups in a French press and make an espresso version of it, these are perfectly fine. If you have a history of miscarriage and the first trimester is extremely sensitive, then make these teas more dilute. And drink less of them. And it's not because they're dangerous. It's because if you have any problems, you don't want to have any natural medicine associated with causing the problem. You see, that's the other side of it, is always when we use natural medicine, where there is any risk of any symptoms happening, we always have to consider the political position of doing it. And so, therefore, if you are working with a gynecologist and they're telling you, you know, stay away from this or stay away from that, you need bed rest, you're in a very, very sensitive situation, I would say, from the herbal standpoint, yeah, you can drink peppermint tea, you can drink ginger tea, but you also want to think about just eliminating all kinds of possible factors that could potentially be associated with any adverse reactions, whether they did it or not. So I've said this before, it's a very, very common problem, that many times if we have a medical condition, we just have to work with the doctor and keep the other things out of the picture. And that's only in a really sensitive, really unstable situation with pregnancy. Normal, healthy pregnancy, these teas are fine. Okay. Lots of good questions on the webcast again. Thank you. For those of you who join us later in the week, feel free to add more comments, questions to the webcast. You can do that anytime. And I will answer all of them, as I always do. So let's go ahead and wrap things up. And your deepening practice, your homework assignment, read through the monographs, study them, read the new files, review everything. There'll be more coming even before we get together again in 2 weeks, no class next week. And start drinking the aromatic teas. If you do not already on a regular basis, this is going to be your primary approach to aromatherapy for the digestive system. Lots of recipes and other methods will be coming as well. And with that, unfortunately, it's time to sign off, and I will just say thank you to everybody for your sincere interest in this very interesting field of study. And I will invite you to come to the breakout groups where you can interact with so many other interesting people who have interesting stories, interesting information of their own, personal experiences, and more information and questions that maybe you know how to answer. Okay, so with that, Colleen, I will sign off. I'll just say thank you to you again for hosting the call as you do every week. And thank you to everybody. Have a wonderful 2 weeks.